And thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And we love to bring you interesting shows every week. As many of you know, Dr. Zamperone and I take many of you, whoever would like to join us, on ground expeditions. That means when we're there together in the flesh, you know, in the new world, who knows where we are when we're doing our radio shows. As a matter of fact, our guest today is near Seattle, and I am in Irvine, California. So you never know where anyone is virtually. But if you'd like to join Dr. Zamperone and I on the ground, you can always do so. We have ongoing workshops. We had a really fabulous, very well attended and closely sold out event, which was an evidence-based natural medicine symposium at Stony Brook University last week, where many of you who came received 5 CEU credits towards whatever profession you are in, which is just fabulous. And then this week coming up, we have several events. One event we have is an on-ground Chinatown herb walk, where we actually go into Chinatown, and it's like having a day in another country. We learn about tongue and pulse diagnosis, Qi Gong. We actually do Qi Gong with Qi Gong masters in the park. We go to a facility which makes Chinese remedies. It's an underground facility in the bowels of Chinatown. Very, very interesting. And an FDA-registered laboratory, as a matter of fact. So we do all kinds of interesting things. And then our trip for coming up is for our Jamaica trip. In our Jamaica trip, which has been going on about 25 years and was certified for 3 CEU credits through Stony Brook University, we actually live for a week with shamanic healers, shamanic bush doctors in the jungles of Jamaica, learning about their healing rituals, herbs, thought patterns, drumming, Nyabingi drumming, all kinds of rituals that they use for healing. And I wanted to bring that up because that is our topic for today. Our guest wrote a beautiful book called Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, A Physicist's Journey with a Remote Australian Tribe. And although our discussion today will focus around her remarkable journey and her husband's remarkable journey using Aboriginal healing with remote tribes in Australia, we do a very similar thing right in Jamaica. And so that is open to the public. So if you feel inspired today, you actually can come with us. Just get in touch and sign up for our next trip, which will be in March. And our guest today is a multiple award-winning author of a book called Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. It's the inspirational true story of Dr. Gary Hulse's healing journey with a remote Aboriginal tribe in the Australian outback. Co-authored by today's guest, Robbie, along with her husband, who unfortunately is now deceased, but he was a prominent physicist and alternative healer. The book was actually written at the Aborigines' request to reveal their healing secrets to help others. The book has won the prestigious Nautilus Silver Medal Award and has been shortlisted for the Distinguished Forward Review Book of the Year, as well as the USA Book News Best Book of the Year. Portions of the book proceeds are donated to nonprofit or Australian Aboriginal organizations. And thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome, Robbie.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
So you have a beautiful picture on the front of the book of a sacred symbol on a rock. Is that a photograph or a painting?
You know, that's a good question. My publisher came up with that. I thought it was beautiful. I can't tell. It's so beautifully done. I can't tell whether it's art or it's a photograph.
But it looks like one of those things that's a photograph of a sacred symbol and then painted the way they do it. But in your book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, you do have many photographs of people yourself and people in your family that were used during, you know, the healing journey that I guess was first taken by your husband.
Some of them were by my husband, and then some of them were by myself when I went back after he passed. And a lot of the symbols that are used in the book are taken from what the Aborigines would actually use as symbols. And I love that on the cover of the book they have three individuals sitting. That symbol on the rock is three individuals sitting around a fire, a campfire, very ceremonial, very meaningful. So there's a lot of things tucked away in that book. I'm surprised you picked up on
now,
that.
Now, your husband was a mainstream scientist, a physicist, brilliant scientist, and that's not the kind of person you would normally think would relate to something as obscure as Aboriginal healing. So what brought him to take that kind of journey?
Well, that's a good question. He was very much a scientist. It was pretty much a black and white world, and it didn't exist unless it could be proven. So for him to go into something like the outback to be healed by Aborigines was a very desperate act on his part. He was told by the doctors that he had less than 2 years left to live, and he couldn't come up with any other answers. And he happened to meet a woman, a naturopathic physician from Australia, who told him about the remarkable healing abilities of the Aborigines. And you know, I just love these trips that you do. Talk about fascinating and exciting. Even Chinatown, and I've always wondered how they do that with the pulse taking, with the tongue and the wrist. I mean, that's fascinating. But these indigenous cultures have a lot of wisdom, deep wisdom, and they know how to use the mind and help from the other side of the veil or a number of different sources. So this was quite a step for him, but obviously he was quite desperate to start seeking out other answers.
So now, how did he make that journey? Because he already was rather ill. Was he wheelchair-bound at the time that he took the trip to Australia the first time?
Believe it or not, he was. He was a quadriplegic. He had been a quadriplegic for 7 years, which meant that he had no feeling from the neck down, very little movement. He was pretty desperate, and he couldn't get anybody to go with him when he discovered about the Aborigines. None of his friends or family would go with him, thinking this is just such a crazy idea. He won't go if nobody's there to help him. But Gary was a very—he was a triple Scorpio. He was a very tenacious man, very determined, and he really thought it was his last chance. And to be honest with you, Ellen, he didn't think he'd come out of the outback. He was doing it as sort of a last-ditch effort to stay alive. He had two young children that he was wanting to live for, and so he— he went into the outback really not expecting to make it back out, and he took a voice-activated recorder with him. And so what's in the book is the actual dialogue, the conversations that happened when he was in the desert.
So he took a plane by himself.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody must have been meeting him on the other side. You don't just take a plane into the Aboriginal area. You know, you have to land in a place where there's an airport.
Right, he went into Brisbane, and he was met by one of the tribesmen would sometimes live in town. He kind of went back and forth between the village and Brisbane. And some of these, as you know, some of these shamans and others, they do sort of traverse both worlds. And then they had brought in a woman who spoke English, who was part Aboriginal, part English, so that she could teach these healing techniques to this man, this physicist. But the rest of the tribe had never, ever experienced a white person. They had not been exposed to a white person. So it was only these two people that had ever been exposed. So Ray, the person who was in Brisbane, picked Gary up from the airport, from the hotel, actually, and they drove, I think he said, for about 4 or 5 hours. It was a pretty rough road, pretty rough drive getting out into the outback. They were a very isolated tribe. They did stop at Uluru or Ayers Rock on the way out there. He felt there was some mystical things happening there, and then they went into the this remote desert area to be with the tribe.
Before this trip, was Gary prone to spiritual seeking? Because very often people do go in that direction when they have some kind of intractable disease.
Well, that's a good question, Ellen. No one's ever asked me that before. And, you know, he was always, I think, open to the spiritual path, but I don't know that he'd really found what he was looking for. So I don't think that was a driving force in his life. I think he would pray to God sometimes. He was raised in, you know, his wife was, his first wife was very, very spiritual. I think her father was a preacher. So, but I don't think, I think this was just a desperate man trying to find answers to live. And you know, when you're connected to the Aborigines, it's just astounding. When he contacted Ray by the phone number that he was given from this naturopathic physician, they already knew he was coming. They'd known for 4 months he was coming, and he just learned about them. They said, "What took you so long?" They're so tuned in, as you know. They're so tapped in. They're connected to the grid, to this one consciousness. So automatically he got the heads up. This is different. These guys are not operating like the rest of us. So. And so the story began, the journey.
Well, you know, I actually think that there's no such thing as that a particular people are more connected to the spiritual path. But certainly I think they allow it to be part of their reality to a greater degree than Westerners do. Because that ultimate pulsating truth is something anyone can tag into, regardless of the technique that they use to get there. But each group seems to have their own technique for getting there. And certainly the Aboriginals have their own and have maintained that. Although I imagine at this point in time, what year was that he first went?
That was 94.
Okay, so it's not that long ago.
No. And that's an excellent point that you bring up. We all have this connection. And the Aborigines would say that we simply, when we started speaking out loud, we lost our telepathic abilities, and we also lost this great connection to a great extent, to this one consciousness, to whatever you want to call it. We sort of became more and more disconnected, and as we just kept using this spoken language, we kept distancing ourselves more and more from, you know, this connection that we have, and especially to the Earth. So I think that's a good point that you bring up. We all have that ability. It's about fostering it and using that muscle, so to speak.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, I've been a spiritual seeker my whole life, and I've lived in indigenous cultures for many, many years. I mean, for years on end, I lived in a grass shack in the jungle in southern Mexico with the Kuandera, where I learned a lot of my herbal knowledge, and that was quite a while ago, more like the 1970s. But what I found in more recent times was an article that was in, believe it or not, Newsweek magazine. It was in 2002, I believe, and it was called God and the Mind. And what they did was this fascinating study with electrodes and things like that, modern things. But they used different groups. They used a person who was a nun, who was very, very involved in deep spirituality. They used a person who was involved in transcendental meditation and someone else on a spiritual path that might have been a Buddhist monk. And what each of them had, just like the Aborigines have, is a system of practices that they used to get in touch with that inner knowledge and that inner knowing. But what was fascinating about this research is that when each of the participants did their thing, be it drumming, I think they had someone who did drumming, perhaps the Buddhists who do that deep vocal toning and drumming, and the nuns who did their prayer, and the transcendental meditation people who did their system of meditation, they actually did a brain mapping and found something very amazing. And it would be great to also have an Aboriginal healer and a Jamaican healer and a Mexican Cuandero. What they found is a specific part of their brain is triggered, or actually not triggered, it's turned off when they do their spiritual practice. And the part of the brain that is turned off is the part of the brain that allows us to differentiate self from non-self. So you could imagine if we go into that state of mind, let's say while we're driving, that could be very dangerous and deadly. But if we allow ourselves to go into that state when we are seeking a spiritual connection, what happens is your ability to recognize that you are you and everyone else is someone else and everything else in the world is someone else, that dissolves. So you go into a state of feeling that universal life force energy and that universal life force pulse, which is truly part of all of us, and which every healer describes as what goes on when they bring in the healing energy, regardless of their language and their practice.
Yeah. That's something that we should all take note of, is that we, especially here in the Western world, are so into our left brain. We're so tapped into it. And that's the beauty of the Aborigines and some of these other cultures. They don't have all these distractions. They are not constantly in their head, so to speak. They're plugged in to parts of the brain. Like the Aborigines will spend more than half of their time in dream time, which is starting at the age of 3.
Let's describe, like you're using that word dream time, which is definitely a term that's used in Aboriginal healing when described by elders there. But tell us what that means. What is dream time?
Well, I think what we could relate to is like meditation. It's a deep state of the mind where you're going into these other layers like you've just talked about, like you've just described. We could liken it to a deep meditation. And the Aborigines will spend, like I said, more than half their time from the age of about 3 up in this dream time, this state, where they are in these other dimensions, where they'll tell you that's more real than what we think is reality. They're actually directing and creating the illusion. They're connecting. They're being telepathic to things around them. They would actually go and communicate to the tree or the water or put themselves in the molecule of the water. It's something we all have the ability to do if you can just get this mind, this chatty monkey mind, so to speak, to quiet down and get into these subtler states. So, you know, what you're talking about earlier reminds me of that great book by Dr. Jill Bolte-Taylor, Stroke of Insight, and how she had that stroke and the left side of her brain was shut down and she was more in the right side of the brain. And that's a whole different world, and we're very unbalanced. We tend to be very left-brained, very analytical. And if you start tapping into the right side more, you feel like what you were describing, that, you know, you're sort of more into this state of connected to the soul, if you will, and that you're not into that time element, and you're not into the duality. And that's, I think, what we're hoping to come back to, is more balanced state in the mind.
Well, in your book, and I want to remind our listeners that we are interviewing today Robbie Hulse. We're talking about her book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. And she herself went on a journey to visit the Aboriginal healers, and before her husband, who was Dr. Gary Hulse, now deceased, who is a scientist and unfortunately riddled with a severe illness. And what kind of illness did Gary have?
He had multiple sclerosis.
And it was progressing, so that's why
it was chronic.
Worse and worse. And and of course, modern medicine does not have too many answers for that.
No, and that's why he needed to seek out alternatives, because, you know, his body was starting to shut down, and that's why the doctor said he had less than 2 years to live. Your organs are not being fed, and so that's what got him on that transformational journey into the outback.
Okay, so what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a little break, Robbie, and we're going to listen to a natural medicine chest. And then when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion of this fascinating book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, with the author, Robbie Hulse. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the nutrient known as taurine.
Amino acids are chemical constituents that form the building blocks of protein in the body. The official definition of an amino acid is a compound which contains an amino group and a carboxylic acid. Taurine contains a sulfonic group instead, so is not a true amino acid, although it is often referred to as one. The intracellular concentration of taurine is 10 times that of any normal free amino acid.
Taurine was discovered in 1827, but the significance of taurine in nutrition was not realized until 1975, when the journal Science published a study showing that taurine-deficient cats suffered from retinal degeneration. In 1986, the Annual Review of Biochemistry reported that the amount of taurine present in mammalian milk depends on the species. Natural human mother's milk is rich in taurine, but cow's milk, except for the early milk known as colostrum, is taurine deficient. Pediatrics Journal in 1983 printed a study which outlined several of the biologically significant functions of taurine, and an effort was then made to fortify infant formula by adding taurine.
Some species of animals, such as calves, cannot synthesize taurine within their bodies, and so must receive it through their diet. Humans have a very limited ability to synthesize taurine, so adequate intake through diet and supplementation is important. The principal source of dietary taurine is meat of various types and shellfish. Even people ingesting sufficiently high levels of taurine may develop a deficiency due to the overgrowth of certain anaerobic intestinal microorganisms which consume taurine. Certain prescription drugs are known inhibitors of taurine uptake.
The Journal of Neurochemistry published a study in 1975 which showed that taurine concentrations are extremely high in the retina. In fact, the retina contains two binding proteins specific for taurine. Research has yet to determine exactly how taurine functions in the eye, but deficiency of taurine has been found to lead to the degeneration of photoreceptor cells. Continued studies on taurine have linked its presence to several biological functions, besides being a protector of the delicate tissues of the eye. Taurine helps to neutralize oxidizing agents caused by ionizing radiation. Taurine is present in high concentrations in the normal heart. It stimulates white blood cell motility and protects cell membranes from free radical damage. Taurine has proven useful in epileptics to reduce or control seizures. It helps modulate the transport of substances such as sodium, potassium, magnesium, copper, and iron across cell membranes. Additional research supports taurine's role in preventing gallstones.
So, as you can see, the nutrient taurine may be an important addition to your natural medicine chest.
And welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. This is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, and as always, we're wishing you the best. And we love to hear from you. You can check us out at naturalnurse.com. Click on Education to find out how you can take classes with myself and Dr. Z, either in person or, of course, online virtually. Anytime, which is a whole new realm of reality, isn't it, that the Aborigines were tuned into even years ago, pre-computer. And you can also look at our books. We've written many, many books. Go to naturalnurse.com under books. We have books we wrote on arthritis, on weight loss, on sex, on women's health, and many other areas. So check it out at naturalnurse.com or go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, and like us or send us a question. Tell us a topic you'd like to hear a radio show about. We love to hear from you. And our guest today is the author of a book that has written, won many, many awards called The Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, A Physicist's Journey with a Remote Australian Tribe. And we're talking to the author of the book, Robbie Hulse, co-author of the book. She wrote the book along with her unfortunately deceased husband, Dr. Gary Hulse, who is obviously a very brave individual who actually made his initial journey, as Robbie has shared with us, in a wheelchair by himself to the Australian outback. Quite a story, Robbie. No wonder it's winning so many awards.
Yeah, it is a very remarkable story, and I love that it gives a true insight into this beautiful culture, you know, the oldest continuous culture on the planet, the Aborigines. So that was really an honor for him to be there. That was a beautiful gift that they opened their village and their hearts to him and then asked him to take these secrets out into the world, their healing secrets.
Now, that's an important point that I'd like to bring up because, you know, as I've mentioned, I've had similar experiences around the world. Thank God I wasn't promoted to go there through illness, but just through curiosity. However, in my journeys, and with Native American healers as well, there are many elders who are not so open to healing, sharing these healing secrets with the West.
Yeah.
So I think there's either a change, you know, knowing that it's so important to get it out there, or the time has come for us to know this information. I was quite amazed when you have, as part of your introduction, the fact that you and your husband were instructed to share these secrets.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up also the point that this tribe also was resistant. Initially, they were resistant to having a white person come into their village, which doesn't happen. And then to give their healing secrets to this man, of course they were resistant. But when they understood that it was a direction by the big guy, as they call him, or you might call it divine source or all that is or God goddess, they then willingly did exactly that. Then they were very happy to give their secrets to him because they would tell you that we just don't understand about healing. We really don't get it. We don't understand how it's a body, mind, and a spirit, and all three of those have to be aligned, and that if you don't get to the root, the emotional core of any illness, it's just like picking the top of a dandelion. It's going to grow right back, whether you've had tumors removed surgically or whatever. It's going to come back if you don't get to that emotional root, and so that's the part we were missing. And so beautifully, you don't have to go to the outback to be healed. The information isn't available in the book, and I think it's really simple. That's what the Aborigines will tell you. It's always simple. We just sort of tend to complicate things. You probably discovered that as well with the cultures that you visited.
Well, yeah, because that's part of what we would say is the ultimate truth. Now, in the book, Dr. Gary relates to coming to a new understanding about the source of disease. And what's your understanding about what the Aborigines share in terms of that inner source of, let's say, dis-ease?
Well, you're going to find that there is always an emotional core, and I think that the best thing is to start looking at the belief systems that you carry around, your operating system, so to speak, as they called it. We've got these beliefs that are subconsciously buried in the cells, and these emotions that are buried in the cells, and it becomes toxic to the body over time. You really need to pay attention to what are the emotions that are coming forth that are creating problems in your body. It does. If you're not listening to the painful emotions that are creating problems, then it eventually becomes a disease. It's your emotions. The pain is always a great indicator of what's wrong, and so if you're not paying attention to what's creating you pain emotionally, eventually you're going to have to start listening to the body when it starts continuing with that same voice telling you something's wrong. It's letting you know when you're off center, when you're off bliss, because that's really where we should be, that we have underneath this core of bliss, this core of inner peace. So if we're not there, these signs are a way to get you back. And the Aborigines are great at pointing out how we're so chaotic in our thoughts. We're not learning how to really use our subconscious minds to any real degree, and that we are, especially here in the Western culture, we get caught up with emotions and experiences, and we carry them with us, and we don't let them go. And the Aborigines will tell you that everything is to be richly experienced, and then you let it go and move on to the next experience and opportunity, where some of us have just latched on to some of these things, and they've become our stories, and we carry them around. And of course, the body is burdened by that, and that's where you end up with this disease.
And as you describe, as your husband described in the book, I love the story about something he did initially, which was speak to one of the healers who talked about the fact that illness, she related it to a plant, saying that if you wanted to get rid of the plant, you can't just cut off the top. You need to look for the root and dig out the root.
Yeah, and I heard recently the same thing. It's sort of like if you want to take down a tree, you don't take it down leaf by leaf. You know, it's the same thing, which means that you don't just get rid of a thought here or there. You've got to get to the underlying belief. And if, for instance, if you think you can't get well, and the mind is the biggest factor in healing, if subconsciously or even consciously you think you can't get well, then chances are you won't. And so you've got to discover those. The Aborigines, in this particular situation with Gary, they were using muscle testing. But I know that they're telepathic, so they would have other means with their tribes members. But they would find out, what's the subconscious belief underlying this that's keeping you from achieving what it is you want? There's a great DVD, I think it's called New Science of Healing. And there's a woman in that they describe in this movie how she subconsciously was afraid to get pregnant, so she created a tumor in that area of her body. Even though she consciously wanted a baby, she was subconsciously creating a tumor in that area, so she couldn't get pregnant. When she became aware that that was going on, that was part of her hidden operating system, so to speak, she was able to change things. And so that's one of the steps to the Aborigines healing. There's five simple steps, and one of them is becoming aware. You start becoming aware of what's subconsciously or consciously getting in the way and creating this disease.
And so what happened? You know, so he went there, he met these people who described thought processes to him that were foreign, although he was a very deep thinker in terms of Western science. And let's go further along with his story. What actually happened to him?
You know, I think that one of the greatest things the Aborigines did for him was to show him that there's a lot of things that are gray that you can't prove, but they exist nonetheless. That was a big transformation for him. So he was with the tribe for about 10 days, and in that 10 days' time, at the end of that, he was able to have feeling in his body throughout his entire body, which he hadn't had for 7 years.
Feeling might be pain, you know.
Which is why some people are afraid to feel it, so they suppress it or deny it or hold it back, you know, hold it down. And so, but he was able to have feeling for the first time in 7 years, which is remarkable. And he was able to clumsily walk on that airplane on the ride back, the flight home, supporting himself on the airplane seat. But I think the greatest change was internally. He became aware that he had been numbing himself to emotions, and so he had numbed his body physically as well. And he was so transformed. And actually, Ellen, what the Aborigines woke him up to was that he was a great healer. He just didn't know it. He was very gifted. And so he came back, and to me, that's where the real story starts, is when he came back from the outback and discovered he was a healer. And that's what our next book is about that we're working on right now. And he actually healed my sister of a very rare disease. She was going blind, and he fell in love with me, and I wasn't going to go down that route with him. And then in 4 days' time, he healed my sister of uveitis, a very rare eye disease, where she had a little tiny bit of peripheral vision in one eye and no vision in the other. And in 4 days' time, he healed her, and that's when I fell in love with the man and spent the rest of my days with him. So it was a great way to get the girl. So not everybody can do that, but it worked for him. So, yeah, the Aborigines woke him up to a lot of his gifts. Like you said, we all have these gifts. It's just that he didn't know that. We don't tap into this source. We tend to let that chatty monkey mind go running off rather than going inward and connecting inward. So he came back and he became he started using these gifts, and like the Aborigines, he was very telepathic. He was able to remote view. He was able to do a lot of healing. He could see inside the body, just like the Aborigines. He could see people's auras. He could see their spirit guides behind him. So this is quite a shift from a scientist to start delving into what you might call metaphysics or alternative or whatever. But he came back and he knew to foster teaching their healing techniques, it would help to have some initials after his name. So he became a doctor of immunology and practiced what we would call psychoneuroimmunology, how the mind can stimulate the immune system, and was really very, very gifted.
So that term, psychoneuroimmunology, which I actually like very much, but however, it is something that is really well steeped within all traditional healing. And what I mean by traditional healing, Aboriginal healing would certainly fit in that venue of traditional healing. Another great one is Ayurvedic medicine, which is practiced in India. And one of my favorite is traditional Chinese medicine, because unlike the Aborigines, who their entire healing, not that it's any less effective, but it's basically an oral tradition, the Chinese is the one that I see, and there could be others, I'm always learning, who have actually written down these techniques mm-hmm. to a very sophisticated degree so that it can be translated into other languages and easily passed down through generations and to other cultures because of the written concepts, but they yeah. are there in terms of that very, very intense link between the psyche, the emotions, and the body, which is really yeah. what psychoneuroimmunology, you know, addresses. So he yeah. took it to another level by bringing it back to a Western mind.
Powerful stuff. Yeah.
Now what about the environment? Because I know that ancient traditional medical cultures, such as Aboriginal healing, is very much tuned into our interaction with the environment, where in Western science, there's no such concept.
Yeah, it's interesting that the Aborigines they're probably what you would call the original environmentalist. They're the oldest culture, continuous culture on the planet, at least 60,000 years old, but I think they're much, much older. And I think it's interesting that quantum physics and so many other of these current sciences are waking up to what the Aborigines have always practiced. But they, I forgot my original train of thought on that as far as the environment goes.
Well,
I got so excited
they're
about
linked into not, you know, throwing garbage around, not polluting,
yes,
you know,
that's
honoring the earth and what's around us as they would our own body. Because when you're in the mindset of the ultimate connection between everything, you know, throwing things on the ground is not part of, then you're dishonoring your own self, basically.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
They are very, very aware of that and very much in love with where they live and their environment. And I don't know if that's holding true to this day and age, because since I have been interacting with so many of these cultures for so many years, I see there's really a loss in the younger generation, and I'm not sure if that's true with the Aborigines. But I have seen that myself, unfortunately, as modern life encroaches on these indigenous areas.
And I think it's important that we come back to that, because one of the things that the Aborigines will tell you is that it is of utmost importance that we stay connected to the land. There is no separation between us, that you can feel the rain coming. You feel the relief when the rain actually gets here because you are connected to it. It's part of you. So as you throw garbage around, as you were saying, you're throwing garbage into your space, into who you are. It's about that respect. So they are so connected to the land, and they have such a connection and a love and respect, which is what we need to have for our bodies as well. I think it comes down to, really and truly, the answer is love for everything. And if you have love for your body, you won't put in, we're so careful sometimes about what food and water we put in our body, but what about the thoughts and emotions that we're putting in? They're equally toxic or healthy, generating, either you generate chemicals in your body that destroy it, or you generate healing chemicals with your thoughts. It's the same approach. So the other thing the Aborigines are also certainly waking us up to is their connection to the ancestors, which I think a lot of these indigenous cultures do. They're very connected to the land and to the ancestors, and that's something we've also gotten away from, recognizing that that's part of us, and to wake up to that connection as well. But their environment is we would consider it very harsh. It's like 130 degrees. Everything you touch out there has been so baked. It's just, you can't even touch a tree without getting slivers because it's been baking in this 130 degree heat all day. And then, of course, at night it's freezing. It's a really interesting environment. When I was there in 2008, I had the honor of being with an Aboriginal tribe and in healing ceremonies. And they're so powerful in their connection. Again, we have the same abilities, we just don't use them. They actually created amazing thunderstorms that they hadn't seen for years. And they know that it's just simply when they need rain and they're not getting it, it's just that something's out of alignment. It's not like they pray to the gods for rain. They just know that something's out of alignment. So they brought things back into alignment, and then we created extremely powerful thunderstorms that night, which if I had known we were going to do that, I swear I would have covered up my sleeping bag because there's nothing like a wet sleeping bag when it's freezing.
So you know what? We're going to talk about that more when we come back. We're going to take another break right here. Robbie, and Robbie is the author of Secrets of Aboriginal Healing. We do want to allow our parent station, Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. That's where you're joining us if you're listening live, and that's where you can listen on the archive anytime, day or night, Progressive Radio Network. So we're going to announce some of the other fabulous shows that you can listen to right here, and then we will come back and continue our fascinating discussion with the author of Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, Robbie Hulse. We'll be right back with more. Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And today we are having a fascinating discussion, at least it's fascinating to me, and I hope it's fascinating to you, with the author of the book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing, A Physicist's Journey with a Remote Australian Tribe. And what we're talking about here is a book written by Robbie Hulse. She is our guest today. And it was co-written with her husband, who has since passed away, unfortunately, just in 2007. And he was an award-winning physicist and a psychoneuroimmunologist. And back in 1994, he was confined to a wheelchair with MS, and he went to Australia to stay with an Aboriginal tribe and experienced miraculous healing. Now, let's talk about how Gary felt after his journey, and then we'll go into your own journey, Robbie, years later.
Well, he came out of the outback transformed, not just in body, but obviously, of course, in mind as well. You have to, or it's not going to make that change. And he had been very emotionally distant most of his life. He just sort of numbed himself emotionally in many ways from his childhood. And
now, he had children, though, so he must have had a former marriage.
He did. He'd had two marriages. Both failed. You know, you can't... He'd had a really rough childhood, and then he had two marriages that were both failed. He had sort of... he had become distanced from his children. It's not something that you consciously do, but before he knew it, he had become distanced from them emotionally and physically. And he came back from the outback and renewed the relationships with his children and got to meet his grandchild and became much more engaged in life and with people. And, you know, I would see him, as he would do what the Aborigines would do, he would spend hours connecting, plugged in, you know, as we said, in this real-time state. And he would just have tears of joy running down his cheek a lot, just the sheer joy of being alive and recognizing the awe of just life on this beautiful planet. So he and he opened beautifully to a marriage with me. I know that if I had met him years earlier, I probably would not have married this man. But he was so beautiful when I met him in 2001. He was just a very loving, kind, generous soul, which I think that's what the Aborigines had helped him find that underneath, pull off those layers of pain and you know, discover the real person underneath, that loving, caring soul.
So that's something. Now, he came back and was more functional, but he wasn't actually completely free of MS.
No, he was still challenged by it, and at some point, I know a year later, he went back in 95, he went back into the Outback again and said, you guys haven't finished, I'm not totally healed. And they said, well, that's up to you. The rest of that healing is up to you. But to be honest with you, Ellen, I don't think that he was ever supposed to totally heal from MS. I think that his journey, his soul's journey, was to teach us what he did, to pass this information on to myself and others, and to sort of be a conduit for that, show us how to use our healing gifts, which we all have, how to heal ourselves. And then he really actually helps me tremendously from the other side of the veil. We worked as a team before he left, and we work as a team still. I see his energy every morning. He comes to me at 8:00. He was a very punctual man, and those tend to marry the people who are not punctual, which is me. I was always late for everything, and so I thought it was funny that he would show up at 8:00 every morning after he passed. That was kind of a shock for me. I knew he would be supporting me, but I didn't know he would be so active in my work. And I thought it was interesting a year ago in spring when the time change happened, he was an hour off. I just thought that was hysterical that he was finally late for something in his life. It's probably the only time. But,
now, you
but,
yourself, let's go into your own journey, because then you went to the Outback on your own, and you were invited to participate in healing ceremonies with a different remote tribe. You said it's the Pitjantjatjara. I can't even pronounce that.
Pitjantjatjara tribe. And I believe it was the same tribe, not the exact same tribe's members, but the same tribe, because it was around Uluru. So I suspect it was the same tribe. But people should know that, well, when I delivered my son in 85, I was given a blood transfusion that had hepatitis C in it. So I developed hepatitis C and almost died from that. And then the treatment they put me on was experimental, and that almost killed me. So twice I survived really slim odds. And that kind of got me awake to why am I still here, and it got me on this path that I'm on now, is waking people up to they have powerful innate abilities to heal. I healed myself of hepatitis C and chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia, and then down the road, you know, had the opportunity after I was healed to go into the Outback and perform ceremonies with the tribe, and was really quite shocked at how powerful they are and how loving they are. I'm sure you've seen that too, Ellen. These indigenous cultures, they live a simple life, but they're just so joyful. They're so community-oriented. They're so love-based. Such gratitude, you know, coming from them. So that was really an honor to be able to see that and be a part of that. And that was back in 2008, a year after Gary had passed. And I could feel Gary's presence with me in the Aborigine environment.
So tell us what happened. Describe a ritual that you attended and what the effects on you were.
Well, you know, and that's something we're not allowed to talk about, happened in ceremony. But I can tell you that one of the things we did is we used our bodies as canvas, and we painted our bodies and performed ceremonies. And honestly, I didn't, you know, you're just sort of, I don't know if you probably have the same thing, Ellen. You go into these cultures, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what their protocols are because it's such a different culture than yours. But I do know that we created, like I said, these amazingly powerful thunderstorms that just kept circling the camp around and around and around. And when we went back, there were about 12 women who had been invited from all over the world. And when we went back to the hotel, they were just so excited. They said, we haven't seen storms like that in 5 years. And so it made you realize, you know, their strong connection. And it was really interesting. When we were in the Outback, some of the women there were from Australia, and they were surprised that my friend and I would come all the way from the United States, and there was a woman from Canada who had also been invited. They were sort of shocked that we would come all the way across the world to be with Aborigines, when they were like, well, you've got the Native Americans back there. Why are you here? And so they were coming from Australia to the United States to see the Native Americans. So it's interesting that
that is interesting, right? that we have to go far afield. Well, I have lived with Natives here, even in fact, a wonderful tribe, the Shinnecock Nation on Long Island. So I have found that every indigenous culture has maintained to a much higher level than Western civilization. Many of these belief in healing, I would say, is a big part of it. And there's no reason why it can't be used along with regular Western medicine. One does not preclude the other. It's inclusive.
Yes, it's complementary. Absolutely. I think that's a good point. If you, especially these techniques that they show how to use the mind as a powerful healing tool, it will accelerate and sustain the healing because that mind is such a powerful effect. And it's a big factor in your healing, whether you stay well, whether you really pull out that root, to that emotional core. And so I love that. It's complementary. You know, they should all work together, in my opinion. They've all got things to offer.
Yes, very much so. And it's a matter of opening rather than closing, opening to possibilities. Now, what happened with you? You went specifically with a hepatitis C complaint on a Western level?
Well, I was, like I said, I was healed by the time I went into the Outback. I had to learn how to love myself to higher degrees. I was working way too much. I was really good at ignoring my body, really good at working through fatigue and exhaustion, which I think a lot of people here in this culture are good at. And I really had to start changing my lifestyle. I needed to, no matter what's going on in my life, I take time to have exercise every day, and I take time to meditate so that I go inward and I stop that chatty mind, that revved up mind, and really connect within. That's such a healing thing to do. I mean, I was just reading how there's thousands of studies out there, thousands, that show the benefits of meditating, like we started earlier in this conversation about that they've seen how the brain shifts and changes. So I, you know, I'm very careful about what I eat, that I eat healthy, organic food. I'm respecting and loving this partner, this body, this beautiful vehicle, and aware of the thoughts that create disease or create wellness. So I'm staying more in the love-based emotions, the gratitude, forgiveness. I mean, those are very healthy emotions. And staying out of the guilt and the shame and just, you know, loving myself more. Those are all very healing things. And those are simple and accessible to anybody. Anybody can do that. So that's what the Aborigines teach, and it's what I was doing. And I discovered that what I was doing is exactly what the Aborigines were teaching. So that's another reason to get excited about, you know, continuing to pass this information out. You know, Gary came back from the Outback and discovered that he was a very gifted healer, and he was healing. You know, you don't go to an alternative healer typically unless you're stage 3, stage 4 cancer, nothing is working. And so he was spending a lot of time helping these people who were very desperately ill. And we decided, let's go to the other end of that and start helping more people by waking them up to the fact that they are powerful healers, that they have the innate ability to heal, and teach them how to create wellness and how to stay well and how to heal what they have.
I am so thankful that you said that, because I think it's a real mistake to wait to end of life to try to capture some of this energy, when I think a much better use of it is in daily life to actually avoid getting to that state in the first place. Not to say if you're there not to try this, but why wait?
Yeah.
You know, this is the thing about holistic medicine, which I've been involved in so many years. Many, many people wait, even like for a cold or a flu, they won't use natural remedies. They'll use an antibiotic, which is so, so foolish. The best use of natural medicine is really preventative, and I mean true prevention.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where we're going. Now, we're going towards the end of our time here. You just have been a marvelous, marvelous guest. How can people find your book, Secrets of Aboriginal Healing?
Well, it's on Amazon, it's on Barnes & Noble, and I have a lot of information on my website to help people as well.
What is that website?
Okay, it's holzwellness.com, HOLZWELLNESS, Holz Wellness. There's no T in it. So it's holzwellness.com, and there's a lot of information up there on, you know, there's a There's a lot of information in the blog. The book is available there. Consultations are available with me. So there's a lot of helpful things. That's sort of my passion, is waking people up to their powerful healing abilities, and they can do it.
Now, I do want to tell our listeners that, of course, at PRN.FM, we will have this show posted, usually by, you know, the day after its original broadcast, and we do have HulseWellness.com there as a link, so you can just go right on the link and find Robbie directly. So I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And I want to thank you, listeners, for joining us once again. Please visit us at naturalnurse.com. Give us a like at facebook.com. Tell us what's going on in your life and what you'd like to hear about on the next The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until then, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.